Good to be here at the 35th Congress. Today we have a lecture regarding something that interests me particularly very well, since I'm as well very keen to give my toys, tools, and so cars, computers, and whatever is surrounding me a name. And so we're going to discuss, actually, we're going to have a lecture. It's called Are Machines Feminine? I don't know how it exactly comes, but most of my machines are feminine as well. My car, my computer. And once in a while, I have to touch them and really treat them well. Maybe that's the kind of behavior that I have towards these things. Then it's maybe as well because of my twisted mind that I consider these machines as being you have to take care about them, otherwise they can do really weird things. But this lecture then is actually about exploring the relations between design and perception of machines and the dynamics in between. The lecture is provided by Polaris, and she will take, it's she in this case, I may say, she will take actually an angle at the examination about how we map gender on computers and machines. We will look a little bit into the software in machine-human interaction as well, a really interesting field there, the relationship in between, and we will dig a little bit deeper in the cultural history of imagining and building human-like machines. I would love to see Polaris here on stage. Please, ladies and gentlemen, give her a warm welcome. Polaris.
Thank you all for coming today. I know it's early and it's on the last day, so I appreciate that you're here. On the other side, I do feel a bit pressured to make your time worthwhile, as much essentially in at such an early hour in the day. So let's start. I would like to introduce someone to you. This is my assistant, Ducky. I will come back to him if I stumble on my words or if I'm too nervous. Then he will bail for me. So let's go get going with the talk. Are machines feminine? Why did I ask that question? I observed that in cars, smartphones, and computers, when we have a voice synthesis, that a lot of these voices tend to be female. I wondered about that because machines per se do not have a gender on which we could map that to. Although one could argue, what is gender? We might get to that point later on. And before I start off with my short take on history, two disclaimers. One, I cannot talk about the entirety of how we relate gender to machines. That's a really big field. So I have narrowed it down, in this case, on voices, because this is something I know more about. And secondly, I will talk about some movies and books. I will spoil all of them. I'm sorry, but I'm very appreciative of your attention most of the time, but particularly in that case, you can just let it slip if you don't want the thing spoiler that I mentioned. So, let's begin with some history. Anthropomorphizing machines is by no means something new. This is a painting by Jean-Léon Gérôme, a French artist, which depicts a story from Greek mythology called Pygmalion and Galatea. And this story is about a guy, Pygmalion, who is disappointed by all of womanhood, yet they really don't live up to his expectations. Might be because of his expectations. And therefore, he goes into his workshop, he's a sculptor, and he makes his own perfect woman out of marble. But, well, I didn't think he thought that through to the end, because she can't love him back, she's a stone. Then he despairs and he cries, and the goddess Aphrodite has mercy with him and lets this stone woman come to life, and they live happily ever after, so I think. That's not as common in Greek mythology, so that's a point. But what this story depicts here is a trope that I would say I found again and again in science fiction of the later centuries, where we have a masculine creator that creates a feminine creation or machine. What you see here are actually two examples from technological history. The thing on your left is a so-called Karakuri Ningyo. That is, I guess I butchered that pronunciation, but I try. This is an automata from the 17th century in Japan. These were small figures that could move around when you put a little teacup onto the plate that they were holding. Then an internal mechanism would get them going and they would roll across the room to the guest you wanted to serve your tea to. On the other hand side, we see another kind of automata. This one is called La Joueuse de Tympanon. It was a music-making automata, and she had a kind of a dulcimer, that's the instrument is called. It's something like a piano, just without the keys, and you would just like tap on the strings. What I already found interesting about these machines, they were usually, or at the beginning, clockworks that were just, we had clocks, and then the engineers who built them made little figures that would also be powered by the clockwork and would move around. And then this got innovated more and more, and to the point that we had figures that were do other things than telling the time. From this epoch, we have automata which can play the piano, which can draw things, and which can also write things. Roughly the same time, looking at literature, how these machines were imagined. On your left side, we have Der Sandmann, or The Sandman, from E.T.A. Hoffmann, which is mostly a story about childhood and fear, but it also features a protagonist called Nathanael, or Nathaniel, who falls in love with a woman. She doesn't really respond to him, she doesn't really speak with him, maybe she's not the talkative type, but they dance together, they play piano together, and she's a bit stiff, and in the end he recognizes, oh no, it's a machine, it's not really a woman, built by the antagonist of the story. On the other side, we have Tomorrow's Eve. Although I'm not very happy with the themes that are, or the way that the themes are played out in the story, I think it's fascinating because to me it seems something like the first science fiction fan fiction of its time. It features Thomas Edison, who builds a robot girlfriend for an Englishman he owes a favor to. And this was at the time where Thomas Edison was still alive. Yes, this Edison who built the light bulb. And again, in these stories, you see this, I see this stereotype of like the masculine inventor who builds a feminine machine to serve his needs or execute his commands. Roughly at the same time, mid of the 19th century, we have this little thing. This is the euphonia, and this is one of the earliest speaking machines. This device tried to emulate how humans speak on a mechanical level. For that, I would shortly explain how speaking as such works on a very rough basis. You take air into your lungs, and then you push it through the larynx, and there you have the vocal folds, which start to vibrate. And this vibration then propagates further into the pharynx and into the oral cavity, and there you have all different kinds of things like the tongue and the teeth and the lips, which then form the sound that is then expelled through your mouth, which encodes information, which lets me communicate with you right now. How did this work with the euphonia? we had a bellows over there that was something like a lung that would then expunge air in the direction of this tube. I think I'll go back to the other picture. That was nicer. Yeah, here you can see it a bit more clearly, where you'd had something that imitated the vocal folds, which would start vibrating, and then would be expelled here through this kind of synthetic mouth, which also featured a synthetic tongue, which then would form the sounds that were produced by this machine. What I, again, thought is memorable is on top of that mouth that you had, which had a mechanical function, you had a head modeled around this. And to me, this again looks rather feminine. Maybe this inventor, he's called Faber, who was a German immigrant in the US, was inspired by the literature that came before. Maybe he designed this to his own whims. We don't know. Sadly, this machine was destroyed in a fit of rage by its inventor because it didn't get the appreciation from the public that he had hoped for. Going further through time, now with the new media of film, we still have the same trope, which can be seen in Metropolis, silent film masterpiece directed by Fritz Lang. The basic story is of a big metropolitan city that is reigned over by a big capitalist boss called Friedersen, and a working class which keeps the machines of the city and the city as such running. And we have the son of that capitalist boss of everything, Frieda, who descends down into the lower parts of the city and discovers the workers and tries to get to help them, because the one woman, Maria, from that part of the city, starts a workers' revolution against the guys above. In answer to this, Friedersen reaches out to an inventor who has built a robot. You can see it here. In the film, it's called Der Maschinenmensch, like the machine human, and it gets further modified. The inventor captures Maria and then forms the robot in her image, which is then used to subvert the workers' uprising. And again, we have here the trope of a masculine inventor using a feminine creation to execute his will. At the same time, coming back to technology, I think this is a switchboard, and these are switchboard operators. At this time, the telephone was not invented, but then really got getting into use. And I think this is important, or concerning this talk, because I can imagine this being the first time when you use a machine and it speaks back to you in a feminine voice. Then, of course, we could ask again, yet, why do we have mostly women in this switchboard positions? One reason is, like in the telegraph system that was important during the war, most men at that time were being out at the front fighting, and then these positions that got were empty in communication, telegraph, and telephone systems were then filled up with women. After the war, this really didn't change. I heard from people that this was because of the signal processing, that because of the noise on the wires, you would understand and discern higher-pitched voices more easily than lower-pitched voices. I think that's and that sounds like a good story, but I didn't find sources for that. And I also think that there are other reasons that are more probable. One rather important one is that you could pay a female switchboard operator a half to a quarter of the salary of a man. And of course, they were also perceived as being more hospitable, more polite, and more serving to the customers. Now, getting closer to voice synthesis. This is the 1939 presentation of the Vocoder. This is a very early speech synthesis device that was developed by Bell Labs. And it's interesting because here we have not the mechanical generation of sound that we had before in the euphonia device, but here we have one that is powered by two oscillators, which then modulate the signal that sounds more, which sounds the most close to what how human speech sounds like. But this still, again, was operated, had needed operation by someone. You had a kind of keyboard that you had to press and learn how to control to exactly modify the signal that was generated to have the speech that you want.
I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage, I can't afford a carriage, but you look sweet up on a seat of a bicycle made for two.
This might sound familiar.
My instructor was Mr. Langley, and he taught me to sing a song. If you'd like to hear it, I can sing it for you.
Yes, I'd like to hear it.
I hope that was discernible. So why do I bring up this example when I wanted to talk about feminine machines? The thing about the Vocoder, in the 50s, Arthur C. Clarke visited Bell Labs and he encountered just that speech synthesizer that could sing that way. And he was so impressed by this that he took inspiration from it and, as you've seen, took the song that could be sung by the Vocoder and implemented it in the script for HAL 9000. That you would say, okay, HAL 9000 also sounds pretty masculine. Why is this important for this? I would argue this plays a role because HAL 9000 was one of the earliest and very present speech synthesizers or speech synthesis systems that was in the public. Of course, not in use, but in the popular movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. That was, I think, came out in 1969. And I can imagine that developers that later wanted to develop speech synthesis system tried to avoid masculine-sounding voices, computerized voices, to avert an association with the character of HAL 9000, which is the antagonist of this story. I think this is one of the points that really got me excited in the research for this, because here we have technological innovation having an impact on how science fiction portrays machines, and we'll have that later again, but the other way around. Coming to contemporary science fiction, I could talk a lot about feminine machine characters in science fiction and movies, but I'm sorry, that will be a whole mouthful. I could do a whole own talk about this, so I'd rather stay with two examples that are more relevant for this topic. One of them, latest published movie, is called Ex Machina, where we have this Pygmalion and Galatea setting overall again. We have Nathan, CEO of big tech company, big data, big boss, whatever, who sits in his bunker home somewhere in Norway, only reachable by helicopter, and is working on his own sentient machines. Spoiler, sorry. He has not only one, but he has multiple, and oh, what a surprise. They look pretty curvy and feminine, I would argue. And then he invites one of his top programmers, that's Caleb, to have him execute a Turing test on Ava, that's her name. Of course, this is not really a Turing test because he knows beforehand that she's a machine and what this is really about, but okay, the Turing test is also about deception. Ava's actual purpose is to execute Nathan's experiment to look if she can manipulate Caleb into helping her escape from this facility in which they're in. And oops, that actually happens. And she stabs her creator and she leaves Caleb behind to die and is free to the world. On the other hand side, maybe a bit contrasting narrative is Spike Jonze's film Her, where we have the protagonist here, Ducky.
That was your part. What was his name?
Theodore. Thanks, Ducky. Yes. Protagonist Theodore, who works for an internet company, ghostwriting personal handwritten letters for others, but is rather unhappy with his own life. He was married, is in divorce, but he's really not ready for it. And then he downloads a new operating system onto his devices, which has its own personality, which is a conscious AI, and starts talking to him. And what is a bit different from the other films, maybe, is that it's not the editors which simply suppose which gender this machine has, but he, or the character, is able to choose. In the beginning, he's asked, would you like your OS to be female or male? He said, yeah, I'd like her to be female. Her name is Samantha, and then they go on developing a relationship, growing on each other and learning from each other. And I think where this is different from the other movies is that Samantha, which is the name of the US, then develops a will of her own needs, and decides to depart from the relationship. Now, speaking of virtual assistants, looking at what we have today and how the virtual assistants we have are characterized, here's one example from the virtual assistant Microsoft has made. It's called Cortana. And it's not called that by accident, that they were, let's say, inspired by a video game character. This is Cortana from the Halo video game series. In that series, she is also like personal AI assistant to the main protagonist, Master Chief. And here again, we find that phenomenon that we had before with Bell Labs and Arthur C. Clarke, just the other way around. Here, technology companies who develop these devices are inspired by what has already been done and developed in science fiction. Now, so far I've always talked about how these voices are feminine or that these machines are female. This is something I have to say about this. Going after Judith Butler, gender is performative. And so none of these voices or devices are inherently female of any kind. But what they do is they perform a certain kind of femininity. And I also want to stress that there's not one femininity, but there's a huge range of femininities that can be performed. And these devices are designed to a rather narrow space of femininity. How is that executed, or how is this designed in different virtual assistants? Or, I think that question was later on.
Ducky, did you mess with the slides?
Did I just forgot that? Thank you. Why would a designer choose a feminine voice over a masculine voice for such an assistant? I've been digging and I've found a study by former professor of communication Clifford Nass, who has done some work with voice interaction, or voice as a medium to interact with machines and computers, who found that people tend to perceive female voices as helping us to solve our problems by ourselves, while they view male voices as authority figures who tell us the answers to our problems. I don't believe that this is anything inherent in male or female voices, but of course this reflects gender stereotypes that we have in our society. Adding to that, not only this, let's say, market research factor comes into it, but I think it's important to consider where these devices are used and which expectations arise from that usage. My mother recently told me that she got a Google Home for her apartment. For what? Because she wanted to regulate the heating. A friend of mine has an Amazon Alexa at home, and what does he use ever? He uses it to switch on the kitchen ventilation, so he doesn't have to stand up or switch on the lights or switch off the lights at night. Another assistant which you might not have heard about is Xiao Ice. This is something like the newcomer after Microsoft's Tay. Xiao Ice is also a conversational bot, mostly used in China, or it's very popular in China at least, where people interact with it day to day, just as they would interact with a friend, sending pictures, asking what's up, and just having little chit-chat. And what I've seen in multiple advertisements for virtual assistants of people who just tell their device, like, hey, make me an appointment next week, or send a message to my boss, an email. And I would subsume this under secretary work. And all of these domains, like domestic tasks, giving advice, listening, doing secretary work, all of this is work that we usually associate with work that women do. That's why I can understand that this might be an easy choice for a designer who thinks, okay, people would expect in such an work environment, such an environment, that women do this work, so I'll design my device with a female voice. But it's not only adding to this performance of femininity, it's not only like the usage and the naming and the design of the voice as such, but it's also the interaction patterns. When you ask Siri, are you a woman? Siri says, I do not have a gender, like cacti or certain species of fish. Other questions in the same direction is, if we ask Siri, that she might tell us more about herself or who she actually is. And she's evading and deflecting. And this reminds me of a sort of vintage femininity of not making yourself seen, of not being any disturbance, just being there, serving your function, but not actually talking about yourself and being present as yourself. I understand why this design decision is made, because of course these devices are services. They are not personalities. They just try to pretend to be personalities. And that's why in their speech behavior, of course, when it comes to themselves, they'll try deflecting and trying asking about other things, what they can do for the consumer or the user. But it's not only the behavior of the device as such, but I also think that the user behavior says something about how we gender these devices. I did a little search on the video portal of my least mistrust, looking because I've seen that people like to flirt with Siri, and or I don't know what you would call it. If I would really call it flirting, maybe starting out flirting, being more creepy, getting more harassing. And from these answers, they unsettle me because I think, yes, this is how you would react if you want to further engage in that conversation, because this device is designed to stay serviceable, to be at hand, to always be listening. But it's also a pattern of communication that I see in myself when people try to harass me, and also that is encoded into a gender role of femininity, of not trying to be aggressive, not trying to set someone back, just trying to deflect and kind of very softly, gently, politely wiggle myself out of the situation. But I don't think that this is a way that you can avert harassment. Silence won't protect you. But that something like that, I think, is also can also be seen in the case of Tay, the Twitter bot aforementioned that was developed by Microsoft. That was Tay was supposed to be like a public Twitter bot that you could train with your own conversations, and then people on message boards decided, "Hey, let's mess with her head," and trained her to say sexist, racist, homophobic things. Of course, this is only speculation because Tay was taken down pretty quickly. But I wonder if this would have happened if it was not Tay, but maybe Taylor. I think this quote from Jacqueline Feldman, who is a New York-based writer and journalist, who also wrote a terrific article on conversational bots, this quote sums it up pretty neatly. "By creating interactions that encourage consumers to understand the objects that serve them as women, technologists abet the prejudice by which women are considered objects. After all, it must speak agreeably. It must not disclose opinions or biographical information, as it has none. It must always answer, and the answers must delight." Well, I've been to a lot of places that I find critical, because identifying the subservient and the obedient that these machines that we use as instruments for ourselves display, connecting that to the feminine, for me, is a bit challenging. I have difficulties with that, because it perpetuates a notion of that feminine things or people are objectified already. But aside next to those critical points, of course, I think speech synthesizers and speech interfaces can have really good uses. I mean, here we have Stephen Hawking, who of course was not only visible in the public as someone who has a speech synthesizer to communicate, but of course also a researcher and a popular science writer. And much, much later, of course, he then is someone who is displayed in the public and is able to communicate and have a voice because of these technologies. Another project that I found online is this one. It's called Cyber Galaxioni, and it's a group of programmers and artists who try to resurrect a Georgian poet and writer on the basis of his interviews, of his books. I think this could be a very interesting way for education to interact and get to know more about people from the past. I haven't talked about Eliza so far, but I think also this device belongs in here. Eliza, to those who don't know, was a chat bot that was built by Josef Weizenbaum. And it was like a therapeutic chat bot who would mirror to you what you said yourself. Like, if I said, "Yeah, I don't know, I just came back from work. I had a hard day and had an argument with my boss. And then the program would respond, your boss? And it would just would let the user keep talking and talking about yourself and then coming to introspection. After Weizenbaum wrote this thing, actually he wrote this thing to show people that machine devices could never live up to a person with presence. He then found his secretary talking to Eliza about the troubles with her boyfriend. And although I would agree with him that I think it's the wrong, it's dangerous to assert responsibility to a machine agent, I do think that devices like Eliza could help with introspection. When I'm conscious of the fact that this thing I'm interacting with is not a present listening other, but more like a mirror, which helps me to introspect myself. And of course, in cars, navigational systems are a really handy thing. When I have to get put my eyes somewhere else, then it's neat to have a voice to interact with me, to give me information where to go, on and where might be dangerous on the road ahead. Yet, my criticism for this is, I don't think we should design just for what the market wants. If we do this, we create a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we believe people like feminine voices more, then of course they will be subjected to mostly feminine voices, and then of course they know that, they get habituated to that, and then they like that more. But they never get the opportunity to experience a greater diversity. As again, example of Eliza, I also think it's important to not take responsibility away from the users. Yes, a feminine voice might be something that is more trustworthy, but do I want to be more trustworthy in a device that sits in my home and listens to everything I say, collecting data for people who maybe just want to have better marketing for me, or who want to know if I'm a suspect, or who just give it right away to the NSA? I don't think that voice synthesis technologies should compromise my media literacy. Coming back to the example with Tay, or with the way that people might flirtatiously harass other conversational bots, we teach children not to be cruel to animals. Of course, also because we care for animal well-being, but also because we don't want children to be habituated to being cruel towards animals, which then may also bleed over to being cruel towards humans. Especially when bots are mostly feminine, I think this applies just the same way. And when I imagine, of course, with the Internet of Things, maybe more and more devices will be able to control via voice. Maybe my toothbrush, my mirror, my fridge, my car. And I feel uneasy when I imagine that I reign about this realm of mine with all my feminine devices that are obedient to me and that serve me. I don't think that helps to get away the already present objectification of the feminine. And I also believe that in total, the voices that we hear now, or in the devices that we use, should also display the diversity of the world. Thank you. For that, maybe if you can take something from this talk, I want to give a shout out to a Mozilla project called Common Voice, where they are building an open source speech synthesis and control but like speaking devices and also listening devices that are have broader diversity, that speak in more broader voices, or and also are trained to a bigger database so more people can also interact with these devices. And here you can donate your voice to contribute to that database.
Yeah, let's do that. No, thank you, Polaris. It was really fine to hear. I'm wondering if we have some, yeah, take something to drink. If we have questions from the audience here. Someone, yes, I see some people. Microphone two, please, can you?
Hi, I've got a very quick question about sort of the idea of emotional labor and feminism, how it plays into this. Because there's been some studies on how people are using increasingly tools such as Siri for example, emotional support to talk to them when they're having a bad time, etc. And some recent feminist research has shown that sort of men vastly over-rely on women for emotional labor rather than men. So do you think that there's a notable difference in the degree to which, for example, people would overuse Siri when Siri has a feminine voice for emotional labor versus Siri with a masculine voice for emotional labor?
As with Eliza, I think I see the possibility in these devices to help with introspection, but I think it's as important to reach out to your surrounding to have a sense of trust and building, because giving or doing emotional labor for each other, of course, also enhances your relationship with the people around you, with your friends or your partner. Does that answer your question?
A bit, yeah, thanks.
Is it?
I mean, I just wanted to, sorry, if I can just do a very quick follow-up, what I just found very interesting is that, do you know of maybe any research that has been done on whether or not people are using bots with male and female personalities different for emotional support? Like, do you know if there's been any research done on whether or not people talk differently to, for example, female Siri or feminine Siri and masculine Siri about emotional issues?
No, but that would be a really interesting research question. Thank you.
I have to dive deeper into that, I think. Microphone one, there is a question.
Okay, do you want to comment on the one part where computer voices are often male and often an authority figure, and that is in aircraft autopilots. They tell you to pull up on a bad day, and that is a male voice. To know that.
And therefore, like,
it's an authority
really
figure,
being in command.
And it is male.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that addition.
Who of you has tools that he or she, or in Swedish there is a word for the...
Hen.
Hen, indeed, for the undefined. Who of you has a tool or a machine or a device or as a character? I have some things. None of you? I'm the only one. No. One is there, there is another one. And the others say, just see this as things then. Right. I hope you're Zen, because then you see as well the value of it as Earth provides us. But okay. Microphone three.
So first I want to say thank you very much for your talk. I think it was one of the best ones I heard on the whole week.
Ah. You're right.
I wanted to ask if you can say something about, like, usually which population or which group of people can afford speech devices, and how this may interact with that this is a female kind of service. Like, for example, we have pictures of really smart home, which are like for really rich people, which are usually white and male. And this is connected then to your smart home with always the female voice. Yeah, maybe if you know something about that or can comment on that.
I would say, of course, like income and wealth is a factor if you get such a device or not. I know of a project where they wanted to outfit like a home for the elderly with more smart home devices, but I guess, of course, these are more pricey, so also might be or more the wealthier population that can access that. Otherwise, also, as before, would be an interesting research question to look into that. I don't know more about this.
Someone on the internet, or is life out there, it seems. Is it male, female, or?
So, I have a question from internet. So, they choose a female voice in the fighter jets because the pilot was statistically more likely to listen and save the aircraft and his life. And the question is, what is your take on that?
Do you understand the question?
I hope so. So,
I can add this. There is actually a voice called Bitching Betty, if I know about it.
Pardon?
The Bitching Betty.
Bitching.
There is actually the study based on the military research for 75. Okay, let's answer the first question.
So what do I think about pilots rather not crashing planes that have female voices? Did I get it correctly? Okay. Well.
It's not like my car. Ruby is my car, but yeah.
I could imagine that maybe a general plays into that, that men try to be more try to prove their dominance to other men, and no. Maybe if they project a male gender onto that plane, they'll try to master it up and try to prove it to the plane, and maybe then they're not really that concentrating on getting the landing right, just a thesis. And if they hear like the soothing female voice, like that is so common in these devices, they might think like, oh, I have a responsibility for me and also the others, so I'd rather not get angry or frustrated and just get this shit done. I don't know.
A question there, is it the interaction with your plane, is that as well female there then, in that case?
I don't think there are like speech or conversational devices on planes, but I know that in emergency situations, there is a voice to try to capture the attention of the pilot.
And that's female?
Seems so. If
does
I
anyone
understand
knows?
It correctly, but
it's some are female, some are male. Fighter jets are female, airliners are often male.
Okay, someone in the audience said that it's different in some airlines. It's rather feminine, or in other airlines it's male.
Microphone two, we have an answer, I suppose.
It's anecdotal from my point of view. I've heard in the Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, the Americans tested to the ways of grabbing the attention if there occurred some malfunctions. And anecdotally, they used female voices and even the voices of the children of the pilots, if they had any.
That's
dad,
manipulative.
Dad, well, give my attention.
Children.
And after that, they could share your right to motors out of order or something. Purely anecdotal, I was somewhat expecting you to touch that. And while I'm at it, Konrad Lorenz had some studies way back in the 50s, I think, about attention, and I think that would be interesting to take his point of categorizing the attention mechanisms into your studies as well. Thank you.
It's something to look up. Microphone three, please.
Thank you for your talk. It was very relevant and very, very good. I liked it. In your talk, you didn't mention anything about Marshall McLuhan, so I don't know if you know about him, but he's...
Yes, he's a media theorist.
Yes, yes. So one of his points is that any medium amplifies or accelerates existing human processes. And in your examples, you made a lot of good examples about the gender dimorphism in our culture throughout history. So my question is maybe, another point of McLuhan is that the medium itself is more important than the content. So here I would definitely be using Voice Mozilla, but that seems to be about changing the content and not changing the media.
Mm. I wouldn't necessarily say this. Of course, there are different ways that you can synthesize speech, and the voices that are mostly used in these devices have a certain fundamental frequency that is higher pitched, or also have certain speech patterns. I think tinkering around with that and experimenting to get more diversity there is would change a part of the medium or the format and not the content.
But yeah. Then do you have any ideas for other types of media that we might explore instead of this voice assistance?
I would say robotics is certainly also something that is subject to that. When looking into it, I saw a lot of also like fembots or robots that try to perform a certain femininity. And also there, I think, why do we need this? Of course, people design them like that because they want to use it in the care area and in care work. But I think tackling this on different levels is not only a good way to go at prejudices about femininity and the female, but also around masculinity. Of course, also we could also use male voices in more devices to perpetuate that, yes, also men can be trusted, can be helpful, can be polite.
I would suggest that we actually do something, a test here with the elevators, for instance, in this building, and change the voice and then do a kind of inquiry about it. Isn't it? Put a children voice in it and scream like, oh no, not to number two or whatever. That would be, you know, to just a test. Microphone one, please.
Yes, I was wondering whether it might also be something maternal. So from my impression, I know some people that seem to be looking lifelong for the caring mother that tells them what to do, and that somehow also, I think this is not only for men, but also for some women. So could it be also a maternal thing that these voices are female?
I guess I lack the background in psychology to really answer that. I would just like give maybe my own general knowledge, which might not be the best basis for that. Okay. But also a good question, maybe to look into that.
Thank you.
Right. We go to microphone two.
Hey, thanks for the talk. It was really good. I was wondering, since you researched on the subject and you kind of gave it as a concluding thing in your talk, what would be a way that we then really diversify those, speech synthesizers and voices that we talk to? Could we imagine bots taking shifts and sometimes you talk to, I don't know, a man voice and sometimes it's a female voice that answers you? Or should we rely on beeps and blobs rather than actual speech synthesizer talking back to you? Do you have any like insight on this?
The first answer I would give to that is I think in the beginning a consciousness about this is important, to realize, oh okay, there's so many like devices that speak feminine to me, and that might is perpetuating the idea or the notion that femininity is objectified and that these two belong together. I think this is the starting point. And as I said, the Mozilla project is something that I would look forward to also to get my voice, because I think that's a good way, like have a more diverse training set for some voice synthesis is done with neural networks, so that they train on that. And then maybe, of course, trying to get this into public.
Yeah, let's raise that number maybe today, if we have the chance. Number three, please.
What do you think about neutral voices?
Totally doable. Well, I don't believe that we have to rely on this binary. I think we already acknowledge that people do not fit in that binary. Why should our machines do that?
But usually the female voices are very stereotype female. So if you take a voice where you cannot define whether it's like a very female or a very male voice, because there are some people where you hear the voice, and if you don't see the person, you cannot tell immediately if it's a male or a female person. So why not just do it with the voices? And then you don't even have to think about whether it's male or female.
I believe because, or at least speaking for me, because of the way that I was raised, the socialization I got, when I see people, the first impulse I have is try to, is it a man, is it a woman? And then I realize like, hey, maybe that person just doesn't care. And I think that was a learning process for me. And I think the same also happens with voices, that in the beginning, when we hear them for the first time, we're like, is it female, is it male? But I think through spreading a consciousness about this, that this reflects also gender stereotypes we have in our society, people might get more open to this and more used to this. Does that answer your question?
Yes. But I think, why not use this moment now to make the world more open and then also put it back in the normal world where people don't have to think about gender too much. Maybe now it's the time when you can just do it with those voices, people get used to it, and then it's not a big issue anymore if it's a male or a female in general. But thank you.
That's a good approach. Let's do that.
Yeah. Number two.
Hello. Nice talk. And I think what I liked about up is maybe we like female voices because they are high and we are programmed to really give our attention to female, to high-pitched voices, because children have mostly high-pitched voices and we are programmed to care for them. For example, cats also meow in
higher pitch.
Higher pitches to get our attention, and maybe that's the reason why we really want to hear something like that.
I don't know how about you, but I'm not programmed. Like, I have a brain made of biological neurons. I also thought about that this might be something that gets attention. But on the other side, also people that come perform a certain authority also get attention. So I think, yeah, that might be a point, but I don't think it equalizes the other effects, for example, that we associate a lower pitch with a more authority performing voice.
We can have one last question, sir.
A very short question. Did you find any counterexamples, any cruel, proactive female voices on automata in culture? Did you find any counterexamples of the thesis some female automata or automata with female voices which act in a cruel and proactive way in some cultural artifacts?
About like Ghost in the Shell, Major Kusanagi. I think she's pretty cool and going for herself, but well, she's not like a voice synthesizer. But what I found is in like one of those rather creepy videos of people flirting with Siri, I found one example where Siri then just responded after being harassed all the time, like, okay, that's it. I'm going to the Digital Agents Union and reporting your harassment. I was like, yes, which engineer put this in? I want more of that.
Polaris, thank you. I would love to Actually, I would love to do a call to change the voices in the elevators here and really to have a test next year. It would be really fun, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for your fantastic talk. I'm really looking forward to whatever we're going to do with it. Thank you, audience, as well. Give a warm applause as well to Polaris.